Over the last 2 days, we've begun to position Paul's initial letter, the one to the Galatians, in the context with the overall testimony that is found in the Christian New Testament. It is among the first books, probably the first book written in Greek in the entirety of the collection of the Christian New Testament. There's every reason to conclude that Matanyah in Hebrew and Yohanan's eyewitness accounts, the only two eyewitness accounts in the entirety of the Christian New Testament, that they were both had been scribed years before Galatian, but were written in Hebrew. And they were distributed principally only in Yisrael. But at the time that Galatians was written, it was the first book written in the Greek. Mark and Luke's hearsay accounts could well have been scribed initially in Greek as well as Acts, but they would not be written until well after the 50 CE writing of Galatians. And this is Paul's first letter. It was written to establish Paul's credentials, according to Paul. It was written to refute the Jerusalem council that had been called by Yosha's disciples to refute Paul's preaching. It is an extraordinarily nasty book in terms of its attitude and approach. It is extraordinarily erroneous in terms of Paul's claims. It is anti-Semitic in its tone and full of errors. It begins with Paulos, and as we discussed, the man's name wasn't Paulos. He chose to change his name. He is the only person that qualifies for, when Yosha in the Sermon on the Mount said, I've come in my father's name. The father's name is Yahweh. His name is Yahusha. I came in my father's name and you didn't receive me. But someone will come in his own name and him you will receive. There's only one person who qualifies for that warning. Paul. He was born Shaul. He chose his name and came in his chosen name of Paulos, and his testimony, while he claims he speaks for Yahusha, is wholly opposed to him, wholly opposed to the Father's Torah. And so this is the man that back in 30 CE, 20 years earlier, Yahusha was warning the entire world about in the midst of his Sermon on the Mount. And so when he came in his own name, people disregarded Yahusha's warning and chose to accept him. Now, they didn't accept him during his lifetime. If you'll notice that Paul's letters, we read through this, he is being rejected by the Galatians, a community from Galatia that was due north of his birth town in Tarsus. It's the whole of central Turkey today was the Roman province of Galatia, filled with Gauls, which the Romans called Celts. And throughout this, he calls them morons. He calls them fickle. He says they're, that they are disgusting for not having trusted him and believed him. And he admits that his story is different than the story that comes from not only the Torah, but from Yosha's disciples, but that they once were persuaded to believe him, but now had rejected him. The exact same situation is presented in Paul's letters to the Corinthians and Paul's letters to the Thessalonians. And it is reinforced in his love letters to Timothy, where by the time he gets to Timothy, the last letters that he wrote, he's saying, everyone has rejected me. Well, that's it's interesting in that those who knew Paul best, those who actually knew what the Torah said, that paid attention to what the Torah said, rejected Paul, all of them. And it's only through resurrecting Paul's letters and promoting Paul as if he spoke for God that he is influential today. In fact, I would say that without question, Paul is the single most influential person in the world. Most influential person has ever lived. No one has influenced more people than Paul. He is overwhelmingly the most influential person who has ever lived. And unfortunately, his influence has been 100% negative. So this begins with him choosing his own name, Paulos. Then him calling himself an apostle. And yet the Greek title, apostle, which means one who is prepared and sent out, was never ascribed to him by anyone. Most certainly not God. God never, ever listed Shaul, or Paul, as he chose to be called, an apostle. He chose those he wished to be apostles, and he prepared them, and he personally sent them out. And neither did Yahusha declare Paul an apostle, but actually warned us about him, called him the false apostle, the false prophet of Ephesus, where Paul spent an inordinate amount of his time. He was the wolf in sheep's clothing in the Sermon on the Mount. He is the one who came in his own name that was contradictory to, that people would accept in place of Yahusha. And so this is a title that he proclaimed upon himself. It was not given to him. So Paulus, an apostle, not from men, because no man gave him that title. You know, the passing on the title of apostle is something that the disciples could certainly do, but they didn't do it for him. So he was not an apostle appointed by men. And then he goes on to say, not even by the means of man. So what he's claiming now is that his apostleship, it came from God, and yet there's no evidence for that whatsoever. As a fact, God in Habakkuk, which Paul will cite to justify his doctrine, his faith, says of Shaul that he's the plague of death. And it's not just that he says that Shaul is the plague of death. Habakkuk specifies the timing of the man named Shaul that they are attacking, his attitude, his ego, his audience, his approach, all of that is delineated in Habakkuk. It says that he would claim authority over Gentiles, which is precisely what Paul did, that he would be exceedingly arrogant, which is exactly what Paul even says of himself, that he will use circular reasoning, which is evident from all of his letters, but that's the very thing that Shimon Kefesh accuses him of. And it says that he would be overtly opposed to circumcision, which was the fulcrum of Paul's argument against the Torah and its covenant. And says of this man who will rise up during the time that the Moed Mikre are being fulfilled, and which is precisely what he did, and following Yosha's fulfillment of the first four Moed Mikre, that this man named Shaul, which was his actual name, that he would be the plague of death, and that all of those who listened to him, all of those who believed him, they would die. That none would find satisfaction. That there would be absolutely no one satisfied that believes Paul, according to God. And yet the same man, even though God had openly condemned him and warned us about him 666 years exactly before he penned his first letter, claims that he was on behalf of Jesus Christ and God, the Father. So let's take a moment and look at Iesu Christu, which was provided here by the placeholders in Greek. They 100% of the pre-Constantine, and even in fact the first Constantine, manuscripts of the so-called Christian New Testament never once write out Iesu, Iesus, Iesun, Christou, Christos, Christoun. Never once write out what Christians believe is the basis for the name Jesus Christ. Never once. It's always placeholders. And the placeholders came about through the Septuagint. So that's how Paul would have come to recognize this. He was writing to a Greek audience, and he wanted to use the Septuagint as his means to convey the style so that he would look like he was appear as if he was writing for the same God who inspired the Hebrew text that was translated into Greek by the Septuagint. And in the Septuagint, every place that you see a Hebrew name, including Yahweh's name, including Yahusha's name, which appears 220 times in it, it is always represented initially by the Hebrew name being written in Hebrew in the midst of the Greek text, to finally, in later versions, the Hebrew names being represented by these Greek placeholders. And they permeate 100% of the pre-Constantine documents, and even the first of the Constantine documents. And so there is no basis for Jesus Christ, or for even Iesu Christu in the ancient manuscripts. So now, when you're looking at this, if you're reading something that was written by Yao Kanan or Matanyah, you would immediately turn to the Septuagint and then to the Hebrew text to see what name and title was represented by the placeholders, and you would have Hamasiah, which means the work of Yahweh, Yahusha, which means Yahweh saves. But you can't do that in Paul's letters, because Paul was deliberately separating Yahusha from Yahweh. We'll be back in a moment. All right, so as we're dealing with the placeholders, which were capital Greek letters used to represent Iesu, Iesus, Iesun, Christo, Christus, Christoun, assumed to represent those words. The first thing we have to recognize is that the placeholders in Septuagint were used, and this is a carryover of the Septuagint, were used to represent Yahweh, Yahusha, Messiah. And so to render the placeholders as if the placeholders didn't exist, and to simply present a Greek spelling of using Greek grammar rules of these names shows a wholly blatant disregard for what's written on the oldest manuscripts. If you're a Christian, you need to know that. You need to know that of the 69 pre-Constantine manuscripts and of the first generation of Constantine manuscripts, and the reason that things are dated pre- and post-Constantine is that once Constantine came to power as a pagan monarch, as a pagan pope, the fidelity of the text of the so-called Christian New Testament changed so radically as Christian leaders began to manipulate the text to facilitate their religion. And this all is derived from the Nicene Council, which is the council of the God of victory in the Greek religion. That at this council, the entire purpose of the council was to create a god out of a man that was wholly disassociated from Yahweh and his Torah, but very closely associated with Dionysus. Almost every aspect of Dionysus and the Christian Iesus Christos are are the same. But if you look at the documents prior, the manuscripts prior to Constantine, while there is not great textual fidelity, in other words, the scribes changed anything they saw fit to change, after Constantine's, there's not even a pretense of textual fidelity. Now, if you're a Christian and you're holding up your book that's called a Bible, which is by the way, the name of an Egyptian sun goddess, and you're saying this is the inerrant word of God, you're a numbskull. Because between the 69 oldest manuscripts, by the way, which do not agree with one another, and the Textus Receptus, and then later the Nestle Allen, there are over 300,000 known variants among the 180-some-odd thousand words. So even if you were to take the giant leap that Paul's letters, which comprise half of the Christian New Testament, don't contradict Yahweh's testimony, meaning that they can't be the inerrant word of God when they're self-contradictory. Even if you're not well enough informed and rational enough to recognize that, you can't claim that it's inerrant when older manuscripts differ in more ways than there are words in the text. It makes the inerrant claim stupid, misinformed, wholly errant, totally unsupportable. As a matter of fact, the antithesis of that would be true. But there's no place where the errancy is more overwhelming than it is in these placeholders. And replacing the placeholders with things like the Lord or Jesus or Christ or any number of other issues. Now, as it relates to Paul, the reason we can't replace the placeholders with the appropriate name, Iusus with Yahusha, and the placeholder for Maaseiah with Maaseiah, is that Paul absolutely never once quotes Yahweh, not in any of his 13 letters. And he wholly misrepresents everything Yahusha said and did. Paul's dogma, Paul's faith, Pauline doctrine, and Yahusha's characters, basis, words, and deeds are the antithesis of one another. They're exact opposites. And so you can't ascribe Yahusha to Pauline literature. Moreover, there is no such thing as Yahusha Maaseiah. Maaseiah is a title. Titles go before names. Christ is not Jesus's last name, and it can't be used in the order that Paul has written it, rendering it stupid. So you can't say Yahusha Maaseiah. So you can't render them correctly. We are only a dozen words into Paul's letter, and he has made a colossal error by putting the placeholders for what has been later rendered Iusu Christu in that order. Beyond the fact that there is no basis for Jesus, the letter J didn't even come to exist until the 17th century, mid-17th century. And there's no correlation whatsoever between Jesus and Yahusha. Not a single letter. Even the S is a different letter because it's an SH in Hebrew and just the straight AS now in English or in Greek. He didn't have a Greek name. He wasn't Greek. He was never referred to as a Greek. He never spoke Greek. Ever. And the Iusu, Iusun, Iusus endings are to comply with Greek grammar rules. He's not Greek. He did not speak Greek. He does not have a Greek name. To call him by a Greek name is simply to disassociate his actual name from his actual source, which is Yahweh. When you do that, you lose all contact with who he is and what he represents. I mean, it is impossible for a person that uses Jesus to know Yahweh. And Yahweh is God's one and only name. If you are using the name Jesus, you don't have a clue who Yahusha is, what he said, what he did. You have no relationship with him. This is not a casual mistake. You can't discard it. If you're a Christian and you believe that there is a Jesus, you have been duped. And to put the placeholder for Messiah, which is then rendered in the Greek manuscripts in the 5th century as Christos, Christus, Christone, after the placeholder for Yahusha, is to say that Christos, Christus, Christ, is the last name, that there is an individual named Jesus Christ. I mean, beyond the fact that his title is a Hebrew title, and the Hebrew title is very seldom used. In fact, it's never actually used as a title. You will never find Messiah or even Messiah as a title. There is no HaMessiah in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. There is no HaMessiah in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. There is no Messiah as a title in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Messiah is written as a adjective to modify the idea of a messenger who is prepared and set apart to serve in Daniel. And so it's an adjective, not a title. And Messiah is written some 22 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms as a name that means the work of Yahweh. But there is no basis whatsoever for Christ. It's a Hebrew title based upon a Greek title based upon a Greek word. And the Greek word is chrysos, which means to apply drugs. The application of drugs. Moreover, all of the earliest testimony as to what this placeholder for what is now assumed by Christians to be Christos represented from the Romans of the time show that it wasn't based on Christos, which means to be drug at all, but instead Christus. Christus and Christos are entirely different words, spelled entirely differently. They only have one letter in common. And Christus speaks of an implement, a servant, who is prepared and qualified to serve. In other words, Christus is a reasonable translation of Messiah, the adjective that speaks of a messenger being set apart and prepared to serve. But even if you were to get it right and make it Christus, and then therefore those who would name themselves after him being Christusians rather than Christians, and now they're set apart and prepared to serve as opposed to drugged, even them you'd be in left field without any hope of understanding. Because Yahusha didn't have a Greek title. Never used a Greek title, never announced a Greek title, never had a Greek title applied to him, never spoke of a Greek title, was not Greek. And so even then you can't use it. So you can't use it as a last name, Jesus Christ. You can't use it as a title, as Christ or Christian. It's never written as Ha Christos are in, and using the definite article in Greek. It proves overwhelmingly that Paul did not know, had never met, had no affinity with, had no relationship with, had no information about, did not understand, was wholly disassociated from Hamasiah, Yahusha, when he uses the placeholders for Iesu Christou. Oops. If you're a Christian and you come to recognize what I have just told you is true, and I would encourage you, Papyrus 56, or 46, Papyrus 46, I should say. It is a collection, it's a codex, a collection of letters that includes virtually all of Paul's letters. And they're systematically arranged here in Papyrus 46. It's dated to the end of the first century, early part of the second century. It's one of the oldest, most complete manuscripts of that which would later be incorporated into the so-called Christian New Testament. Get a copy. Look it up. See what it says. And when you read in Paul's opening statement, in his opening letter, and see the placeholders in the order of Iesu Christou, you're screwed, blued, and tattooed, man. It's over. At that point, if you're informed and rational, you know that this man is deceiving you, that he does not know that it's a Hebrew title, and the Hebrew title is Masayah, that means the work of Yahweh, and that he does not know that Yahusha is his name, and Yahusha means salvation is from Yahweh. Yahweh saves. As a matter of fact, once you know that it is Yahusha, you do not need to say, and God the Father, as Paul does in his letter. And that is because when you're saying Yahusha, you're saying that you are speaking on behalf of Yahweh. Because Yahusha is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, named Yahweh Saves. Defines his identity, it describes his purpose, his mission. You don't need to add the second part when you get Yahusha right, because you know that you're not talking about Yahusha, but Yahweh. Because Yahweh, or Yahusha, is nothing other than Yahweh saving us. So once you know the name, you would never add, and God the Father. Because they're one and the same. Yahusha is not the second person of a Trinity. The Trinity is a Babylonian religious myth that was adopted by the Greeks, the Egyptians, and the Romans. Once you know Yahusha's name, then you recognize that he is the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, and therefore Yahweh himself saving us, which is what the Torah and prophets say throughout. And once you recognize that, you would never say, and the Father, because they aren't separate. One is simply a diminished manifestation of the other. There is no Trinity. There is no second or third person in a Trinity. A diminished manifestation of something does not make two of something. You know, if you were to clip my toenail, it does not make two of me. We don't have separate personas. Yahusha is to Yahweh as a toenail clipping is to me. In fact, the magnitude difference between Yahusha and Yahweh is far greater than the difference between a toenail clipping and myself. That's why anyone who focuses on Jesus is missing who God is and what he's doing and who he represents. It's devastating in this case. Now, Paul would go on to say, and the God Father, of the one having roused and awakened him out of a lifeless corpse. It is the lie that is so hypocritical in Christianity. There was no bodily resurrection. The one thing that you can say with absolute certainty is that the Father did not awaken Iesu Christu or any other name from a lifeless corpse. That did not happen. Now, if you were to read any of the two eyewitness accounts or the two hearsay accounts, the first thing you recognize is it didn't happen. No one recognized him. Each of the three times that he appeared that day, that was the only common thread. No one recognized him. And the same thing would continue while he would remain here on earth. We'll be back with the myths of Christianity in a moment. We have Kirk on the line. If Kirk, if you wouldn't mind, I've got a few questions for you.
Yes, sir.
When Mary came on the first day of the week to the raised sepulcher where Yosha's body had been placed, did she find his body in that sepulcher? No. And then she was addressed by an individual there, and she mistook that individual for a common laborer, a gardener. Yeah, that's right. And then when Yosha explained that, you know, I'm really not the gardener, I am Yosha, did he give her any specific instruction of what she should not do at that point?
She should not do?
Yeah. He actually does say,
don't
touch me. Why? Because he is now energy. You know, she would have touched him. Probably would have killed her. Yeah, probably would have killed her.
Probably hurt her, yeah.
Yeah, hurt her really bad. Pure energy at that point. So Mary didn't recognize him, mistook him for the gardener. A few hours later, on the road to Emmaus, two fellows that are described as having followed Yahusha for at least a year or so, who witnessed all of it just took place in Jerusalem, that he appeared to them, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Well, no, and, not the way he showed up, but they didn't know who he was.
No. Yeah, so he was just showed up on the road to Emmaus with these two guys, and they're sitting there having a chat, and he said, "Hey, guys, what you chatting about?" And he says, "Well, how could you not know? I mean, it's the biggest thing that ever happened. You know, this Yosha, you know, he was there and they killed him. And all this stuff is going on." And he says, "Oh, yeah, well, tell me about it." And he says, hey guys, wake up. I'm him." No, you're not. Well, let me explain who I am from the Torah and prophets and maybe you'll figure it out. And then later that same evening, you've got the 11 disciples. They're up there in the upper room. They're scared to death because Yosha was done in by the Roman authorities.
Yeah, and number one. Yeah.
Yeah. And for Yosha to come into that room, did he walk through the door?
No, I think he just went through it.
Went right through the wall, didn't he?
Pretty good trick, huh?
Yeah. Are you familiar with a physical body that can go through a wall? Have you ever tried it?
I've tried it accidentally.
It doesn't work, does it? And when he walked into the wall, did any of the disciples say, "Hey, wow, where you been? Good to see you again."
They scared him to death. They didn't even know who he was.
Yeah, he didn't know who he was. And later, there's a breakfast meeting by the disciples. They're all out at the Sea of Galilee. Now, they have been introduced to him because he did introduce himself to them in the upper room. And about a month later, they're out and having breakfast, trying to figure out what they're going to make of all of this. And he meets them while they're taking a morning cruise. And did they recognize him even then?
Not even then.
Not even then. Which means that he doesn't have a body that even resembles remotely the physical characteristics of the body that he had when he was prior to that time, that he spent 3 years with him. Now, what does the Torah say should be done with the remainder of the physical body of the Passover lamb following Passover?
Well, the non-nourishing parts you burn up on the coals or the fire.
You burn up. So what would Yahweh do to the remaining part of the body that hadn't been hacked to death and drained of life of Yahusha the evening of Passover?
He would have to destroy it.
Yep. And he did.
If he's going to be Yahusha.
Yeah, otherwise he's a complete fraud. Yeah, he's a fraud because he's not fulfilling Passover in accordance with the instructions on Passover. So there was no physical body. And anyone familiar with the Torah would know there's no physical body. And all you have to do is read any one of the eyewitness accounts, and they say, no one recognized him.
But that's the key. You have to read the Torah.
Right. So this line that the Father awakened him out of a lifeless corpse is absolutely wholly inconsistent, not only with the eyewitness testimony, but with the Torah and with Yahweh himself.
Okay. Yes.
Well, Kirk, here you called in, probably wanted to speak about something other than this, and I instead played 20 questions with you, but I appreciate you working along with me. I hope that you can call in.
See you later.
It's another day this week, a little earlier in the day, because I always love having conversations with you, Kirk. Well, thank you all for listening. We'll be with you at this time tomorrow.